Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
O'clock hour here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We are talking about a baseball convo because the
Royals organizational awards as small as that.
It doesn't really matter, but that's why it was an off-air convo. But they see the Royals sent out an email at pitcher of the month, player of the month, by the way, it was Vinny and it was Stephen Kolek, and we were saying, I wonder who the Royals player of the year will be, and like they're not gonna give it to Bobby every year. And they're like,
and he's still the most valuable player.
And Cody
player
said,
team.
Well, it's gotta be Vinny. I'm like, oh, he's got a strong is there a case for Michael? I doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Who do you think it'll actually be named? When the Royals put out their organizational awards as in our player of the year, their pitcher of the year, I think.
Well, it's Noah Cameron.
It's Noah Cameron,
right? That's not even a question.
Maybe Walker?
It's Noah Cameron.
But I think it's going to be Noah Cameron.
Should it be Michael?
Well, so
Michael or Vinny? I bet they won't give it to Bobby, even though Bobby is still, on every metric, the best player.
I said Michael because not that they're not proud of Vinny. I think they're very, very proud. Going back to the hitting conversation yesterday.
Papa, that one for Michael.
I could see, that's my just guess, okay?
Vinny was sixth in Major League Baseball in RBI and top 20 in home runs. One of your better average guys. Not as good as average in Michael, though. And played a more, and Michael might win a gold glove, so.
Yeah, I don't care. But I'll guess Michael. Vinny has the numbers to back it up, obviously. So does Michael. I wonder if the Michael thing is also, after the whole convo yesterday at the presser about hitting and how they believe in Zumwalt and all this, I could see them, like, he's kind of the face of, like, hey, we can develop hitting right now. Like, I understand Bobby came up in the system and we've all said, someone texted in yesterday about, well, what about Bobby? I'm like, with all due respect, I don't think Cody or I could have screwed up Bobby Wood Jr.'s development. It's just the reality. There's certain players like that. You can't really screw them up.
Genuinely, if I had been his hitting coach the entire time he was in the minors, it'd probably still work out.
Someone says, do the Royals internally have voter fatigue? Like, we're going back to the MVP conversation we were just having. No, it's just that Bobby's not going to win organization player of the year every year of his career. Because it's an organizational award. Anyway, doesn't matter. Just saw the email, and Cody and I were having an off-air convo. If you were wondering why on camera we were talking, and
we were just it was just a lighthearted, quick conversation. Let's talk about the Chiefs, though.
Yeah,
and their upcoming opponent on Monday. I know, I view it as like this week because it's a game week, but it is next week they'll actually play the Jacksonville Jaguars. The thing that obviously stands out, not that they're 3-1, which is a better record than the Chiefs anyway, but that they have been surprisingly good, not on offense, where people were expecting them to improve, but instead they have been surprisingly good on defense. And so what I was trying to figure out is, do we view this as a test, as we normally would, for the Chiefs' offense against an elite-level defense? Right now in the NFL, the Houston Texans, which is surprising to me, have the number one ranked points-per-game defense in the NFL. Jacksonville is fifth. And as we've pointed out, on points-per-game on offense, same thing applies to defense. The Chiefs' entire schedule is littered with them. They have Denver, who's the number 2 defense, the Chargers, who are the number 4 defense, and Jacksonville, who's number 5 amongst others, amongst the guys. I do kind of view it this way because in looking at the Jags and looking around the league, they have really good linebacker play. They have really good play from their front four, and they get the ball from their opponent.
That's
all
the key.
The time. Now, the thing is, they're playing a lot of teams who like to give the ball away. The Chiefs historically don't like just giving the ball away. So, I would think that that's probably coming back to norm in this one. But I do respect the Jags' defense, a sentence I wasn't prepared to say this year.
That's been a big reason why they have the record they have. I mean, because it's not like Trevor Lawrence has figured it out. His numbers are not that impressive, actually. Brian Thomas is off to a slow start in 2025. Yeah. The defense has actually kind of carried that football team. Things can change very quickly, but you're right. Turnover differential, turnover margin per game, the Jags are the best in football, and they're considerably better than everybody else right now. They're just ahead of Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Philly as far as the top 5 or so. Detroit's also tied. And so this is an area, if you're looking at, and we'll have till Monday to talk about the game.
And we can talk about Matt McMullen at 12:30.
And Matt McMullen will join us in studio today on the show from the Chiefs. But I think if there was one area you key in on, it sounds so simple, but we actually really haven't focused in on it much the first four games. The ability to not turn the ball over in this game feels like the biggest swing you're going to have. Yes, every game you turn the ball over, your odds go down to winning.
Chiefs are better than most.
But based off of what the Jags have done in order to win games this year, it has been reliant. They've been very...
They're plus nine in the turnover margin.
Yeah, they've been very active on defense and been able to go and force teams to turn the ball over.
Now, I will say they haven't been like an overwhelmingly high sack team. Like, they're not the tops of the league, but they are getting to the quarterback. Eric Armstead's had a bit of a resurgence there. He's got a couple of sacks. Josh Hines-Allen is top 10 in the NFL in QB hits, so he gets to the quarterback. And Trayvon Walker, obviously, there's a lot of high draft picks, former high draft picks, guys who are respected in the league.
Is Trayvon out for this one? Because I know he didn't he...
Oh, that's a good question.
Didn't he recently have a...
He did.
A visit with a doctor or specialist?
So we'll see on him, I guess. But they can get to the quarterback. The real... I actually like this because it's like the medium test. The real defensive line, the one you should deeply, deeply fear, is in a week and a half when they take on Detroit. 2 weeks, right?
Aiden Hutchinson.
That's the one I deeply fear. Kingsley or Joshua Simmons and Aiden Hutchinson moving up and down the line, choosing his poison and choosing who he wants to go after. That's the real test. They got multiple guys there that are at least going to find out whether or not. But for an offensive line that's young, has played well, but I'm not trying to claim the Chiefs offensive line is one of the five best in the league yet. Has played okay, played well, considering that they're pretty new at this on the left-hand side. This is a really good test of can you win it. The only thing that, like, for the Jags, and I don't mean to knock them, kind of like Ross was talking with the Eagles, is there a single win you're impressed by on their schedule? They beat the Panthers. They're awful. They lost to Cincinnati and Jake Browning. And it was Jake Browning. Burrow got hurt in the first quarter of that game, right? I mean, it was Jake Browning, like...
Jake Browning had three interceptions in that game, and they still lost.
And they still lost. The
two big drops in that game, if I'm mistaken.
They beat Houston in what was just a drag-out, hideous nonsense. And we'll talk about their offense, I think, tomorrow. And they beat San Francisco, who is very limited based on their weapons as well right now, and some of the injuries he's had. I can't tell if their defense is for real, because on paper, I think their linebackers are really good. I think their defensive line is good. But I still feel like you can get him in the secondary and just went off. What offense have they played has been able to test him? What? And the only one is Cincinnati, and they did test him, like Jamar Chase and some of those other guys.
I think their most impressive win was the one they just had. That score,
I agree,
makes a lead. I actually thought the Jags dominated the entire game. Yes, 26-21 is the score. And we do know the 49ers have dealt with injuries. But the 49ers, you know, were an undefeated football team going into that game. That's an impressive win. The 49ers were an undefeated team going into the matchup, and the Jags were sitting at 2-1, and they got it done. So I don't think we should, you know, take too much away from the Jags' performance in a negative way and downplay it. But the one thing that has been evident is Trevor Lawrence, it's not as if all of a sudden Liam Cohen has unlocked him yet. Dude. It has been defense, and it's been ETN. ETN's been awesome. He just had a 124-yard rushing day.
People kept waiting for him to drop off a little bit, and he is not dropping off. And look, they run the ball well with Tootin as well. So they just run. I mean, he has as many, I think, 10-yard runs as anyone in the NFL. So their backup running back just comes in there and eats up big chunks and makes it and should be making it easier on their offense. They're still not scoring, so that should be probably concerning.
Add him to the list, by the way, of rookie running backs that are looking pretty darn good.
Well, week one through three, not so good for the rookie running backs. Week four was the most yardage in a single week for rookie running backs in like 30 years in the NFL. So probably just depends on if you look at what happened the first 3 weeks or all the rookie running backs finally coming around. And Hampton, who had a great week, Tootin, who had a great week, and so many of the other guys who have had great weeks.
Rookie running backs had 737 yards this past week.
It's a big week.
Most by a rookie class in any week of September football in NFL history.
They can try to get to him on the other side. There was, and we spent a lot of time on Monday talking about the shift the Chiefs made between Breshard Smith, Isaiah Pacheco, and Kareem Hunt, and that Breshard Smith finally started catching up in the old snaps department, and he looks athletic, and I'm interested in that for very obvious reasons. Even Mitchell Schwartz, I think on the drive, was talking about it and said, like, when you hear a former offensive lineman, somebody's gonna be like, that guy's got more juice. You're like, okay, so it's not just me. It's not just me and Alex, two guys who admittedly don't think they could get a yard.
There's other people at this station that think they could.
I do not.
Still crazy.
I don't even think I could get 0 yards. Does that make, like, I don't even think I'd get back to the line of scrimmage. I'm convinced if you gave me 10 carries, I would finish with negative 15 yards.
Depends on the offensive line you're also, behind.
I don't think it matters.
Here's the thing. You wouldn't get to 10 carries. You'd get hurt.
Oh, yeah, long before
so
it
gets
to 10.
Like, we're not getting the 10 carries, Cody.
I'm just saying, give me the number. Cody, I have to take 5 carries even if my leg's in a splint.
Okay.
I'm finishing with, like, -8 yards.
I would agree.
I'm getting less than the yard. I'm not getting back to the line of scrimmage is what I'm admitting.
I would agree with that.
So, as much as we talked about running back and the juice with it, there was another interesting shift that we haven't talked about yet. Ashton Gelati, the Chiefs' third-round pick from last year and somebody that they had some hopes for this season, officially started over, disappointing to this stage, Charles Omenihue, and the snap totals have finally gotten close to even. Gelati, 47% of the snaps. Charles Omenihue, 56% of the snaps. So they made a shift. It was quiet, and they still used Omenihue more than they used Gelati, but they started the rookie over the veteran, who you had really high hopes for, and a lot of people
had
really high hopes for.
So far.
But he had his best game. So is it that he took the pressure the way we talked about it with Isaiah Pacheco, and he's like, uh-oh, I might lose some of my playing time. Time to get on it. And he is a guy who has openly admitted gold to being disappointed to the checks he has been made available to him in an offseason. Or did he just, like, things click for a week? Bad offensive line? You found a way to take advantage? Because to this point, Charles Omenihue has been a non-factor in the pass rush.
Yes.
This last game, he finally became a factor.
It was his best game of the year, but he, you know, because he actually popped a little bit on the screen. Yeah, I definitely thought he was going to have a great year. Now it's week 4. It doesn't mean he still can't have a great year, but it's been disappointing, to say the least. First 4 weeks of the year, there's some promising, you know, underlying metrics that are out there about Omenihue and his ability to get off the snap of the ball and get across the line of scrimmage. In week 1, it took him 1.02 seconds, according to next-gen stats. Then it went to 0.97. Week 3 was 1.06. This week, this past week, 0.74. So he was quickly getting a good jump on Lamar Jackson, getting across the line of scrimmage.
It's funny what a difference a quarter of a second makes.
Yeah. These are numbers that are clear improvement. So hopefully that's a sign of, like, he's getting close to being able to make an impact in that way. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt it's been a disappointing start. 4 pressures, though, this past week. Hopefully he's getting going. Because if he could, that could change a lot for this front four of the defense.
The way their defense is going right now, obviously you and I both agree they're one of the better defenses in the NFL. But if the pass rush continues like this, I think what we're going to have, Gold, is 1 to 2 games the rest of this year where some team who figures out how to take advantage of the blitz torches them and gets them for big plays. And you're like, what happened for a game or two? I'm not saying it can't work over the course, but I feel like there's going to be 1 or 2 teams that find a way to take advantage of the fact all of their pressure comes from sending Nick Bolton, sending corners, sending additional linemen, putting 5 down linemen we've seen them do a couple of different times where they have Leo Chenal essentially coming in and playing a 5th additional down lineman. They need Charles Omenihue to be better or Ashton Gelati to be a really high improving rookie defensive end. They got that out of George Karlaftis. I know that there's a difference in the rounds they were taking, so the expectation, I'm not saying he should have George Karlaftis expectations,
like,
but Karlaftis came around, as you remember, week 8 or 9, he was a lot better in the second half of his rookie season.
I'll be interested in the snap count for Gelati this week after seeing he started over and the snaps, as you said, were 47 to 56 in favor of Omenihue, but then Omenihue's coming off his best game of the year. Mm-hmm. Do we see
the
snaps?
The better player.
Then also, it's one thing, we can talk about snaps all we want, but if Gelati's just getting more snaps and he also is not getting the pressures, well, then we're having the convo because Gelati's, of course, the future more than Omenihue, just given it's a 1-year contract and he's an older player versus Gelati they just drafted. So you want it to be Gelati by the end of the year getting better and all that. But I guess it's not as simple as, well, he's starting now. Well, is he starting and is he producing, though? Because he can start over Omenihue all day long, but if Omenihue's the one getting 4 pressures a game and in 25 snaps and Gelati's getting 1, well, then obviously we know which player's having more of an impact. So it's just something to keep an eye on. But we have seen Gelati and Norman Lott get starts the last couple weeks. Norman Lott at the tackle spot. So that's happened. Although this past week, I want to say it was Derek Nnadi that was actually the first defensive tackle out there, or one of the defensive tackles on the first snap of the game.
And look, if you look at the defensive line right now, none of the numbers are going to jump out to you. George Karloftis, to this point, has been their best defensive lineman. He's got 3 sacks. He's got 6 tackles for loss. He has been, and I would say Chris Jones is just wearing a lot of heat. So, like, that part goes in there. But, I mean, if you look at it, the let's find one more pass rusher part, the second best guy's probably been Leo Chenal. That's a sick thing to say. Leo Chenal's been your second best guy in the pass rush department. Well, that can't be good. Like, I mean, and no, that's
scheme,
not a knock
on scheme
him.
Wise, they're making it work, right? I mean, it's one of those things.
Your that's life why I said is, I think there might
your
be a
life is a lot easier if anybody on the front four does it, but they've got at least a defensive coordinator that can mask some of the deficiencies and lack of production right now they're getting from the front four. That's exactly what they've been able to do.
And four,
being super creative.
This is what's crazy. In 4 games, George Karloftis has hit the quarterback 10 times. Pretty good number, right? That's just as good as Josh Hines Allen. It's actually a little better than Josh Hines Allen, who we mentioned for the Jags. Drew Tranquil has hit the quarterback. Or I'm sorry, Chris Jones hit the quarterback 5 times. Drew Tranquil and Charles Minnie hit him twice. You're like, that's it? Which means Ashton Gelati's only hit him once. You're like, you guys have... I need you to hit the quarterback more than every 4 games. Like, that's just not going to be a ratio that is going to be successful in the long run. And again, I still think no matter what, they've proven they'll be a good defense even without it. But the Gelati thing and the Charles Minnie thing is one to watch. That's a matchup, just like the Breshard Smith thing is. Over the next 4 weeks, who has more snaps, who has more pressures, who has more quarterback hits? And over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be paying attention to who gets more snaps, who gets more carries, who gets more catches out of the running back group. Those are the 2 matchups that could actually change.
Trash of the day.
All right, guys, a couple options here.
Okay.
All right. If not, we'll use one tomorrow, whatever. One option is someone that broke their neck doing something that I'm guessing we do every day or at least a couple times a week. That could be a lot of things, but I'll let your mind just wander. Okay. That's one.
People are going to take that in the worst way.
I realize that. Well, that's kind of the point. That's a tease. Okay. The other one is someone getting scammed on Facebook Marketplace, and no, it was not Drew. There's also one about... Not this time. There's also one about cheese, which is...
I mean, if you're going to do the cheese one, get the drop, right?
I think the cheese one is interesting.
What does everybody want?
It's so
913-586-7965.
Obviously, there's multiple days the rest of this week. Uh-huh. I am interested in either the last two. Okay. Cheese or...
We'll save the... Okay.
Or Facebook Marketplace scamming.
Okay, let's do the... let's do the scam on Facebook today, and then we'll do the cheese another time. This is a story out of Clearwater, Florida. It has to do with a rental scheme. So this guy, John, and his girlfriend, all right? I've been looking for an affordable rental home. They thought they found the perfect one. They ended up getting screwed here because the home was listed on Facebook Marketplace for $1,600 a month rent.
Okay.
So it's just the two of them. They have a dog apiece, not too much of a house. They were just looking for anything available in their price range. They fill out an application. They started talking to this gentleman who claimed it would be easier to get approved by the homeowners association if they paid some money up front. Of course.
Oh, no.
When they arrived the next day to meet the landlord and pick up the keys, neighbors broke the bad news that they'd been conned. The real owner of the home was someone else, and that person confirmed the house is actually listed on another site for $2,300 a month. They contacted their bank, tried to put a stop payment on it, but because it was a Zelle transaction, they could not do anything about it. So basically,
landlord shouldn't be asking for your Zelle.
Somebody saw a listing for the scammer, saw a listing for a real home, a real listing, took those photos, made another listing on Facebook for half, not half the cost, but for less.
2/3 the cost.
Looked like a great deal. And somebody, if you're like, man, this is an amazing deal.
It's a steal.
Wow, it's $800 less a month than every other house that looks the same in the area. Well, then it's a scam. Okay, it's not just your lucky day that you're not going to rent the house for $500 less a month than everybody else would.
Have you ever thought about renting like a single family or a duplex instead of an apartment?
I look way too expensive.
I didn't know. I just didn't know if that was a thing you'd consider instead.
It at one point in time,
like a small house. You know?
When I was in Houston, I looked into it as well. It doesn't make, for the type of rental I would get, I'd be paying more money and it'd be an older building and a lot of stuff, like kitchen stuff is outdated versus, yes, I'm in an apartment, but at least it's new.
In bigger cities, it's terrible.
You know?
Smaller cities, I bet. Maybe.
Yeah.
The first,
I lived in a duplex before I lived in my house, and my house would have been like kind of house you rented the first one I lived in, because it was like 750 square feet. I mean, it was essentially an apartment.
The first house, the first place that I lived in post-college was in La Junta, Colorado. It was a legit house. Like was 750 there square
apartment
feet.
Apartment complexes there. That's small of a town.
There what? Were some. There were. There
I
were,
thought there was like $200.
There were two. No, it was $400.
Oh, month. Dude, which, I mean, he was in was, the. Do you know where that is?
Incredible.
That's in the middle of
it
nowhere.
Is in, it is. Ins- it might as well be
400 a month. Like 400 a month. How was the apartment?
It was a house.
Or the house. Sorry.
It was totally fine. It was good. There were no leakages. I mean, the insulation was a little bit rough, but I mean, apartment insulation is also not that great. Yeah. It had a washer and dryer in it. The kitchen was nice.
$400.
It was amazing.
I bet.
The duplex I rented in Waldo, I can't even imagine what to go for now. Because I was renting it probably...
This is in 2018, by the way, as well. Not like 19 or whatever. Yeah, 2018.
Mine was like 2008 or 9 or whatever it must have been. And the duplex I was renting in Waldo was $825 a month. It became $850 a month when they installed a dishwasher.
Okay.
So it was like $825 a month, and it was a 2-bedroom, 1,000-square-foot duplex.
I
was like, I can't even imagine what it would be now.
I would love to rent a house or something because they'd have a yard and stuff, be great with the dog, and I would love it. But it doesn't make sense financially. Like, I've looked.
Not that you're going to have a roommate.
It's quite a bit more, or if it's not, it's a more of an outdated, you know,
building,
kitchen and bathroom and everything, and I don't want that either. So the apartment it is for now. There you go. That's the... trash of the day. Someone did say that his wife should divorce him for being that stupid, and then she can move in with them. That's what someone texted in just a second ago. That's two times on this show we brought up Facebook Marketplace scams. One firsthand with Drew, another with just be careful out there on Facebook.
I feel bad for those people. You know, I feel their pain, you know?
Yeah, at least you didn't get scammed out of $2,300.
That would be ridiculous.
Honestly, though, theirs is wait. They're renting a place. There's photos of it. Still, somebody, you giving somebody money for your couch is insane. Insane. That's a crazy one to get scammed on. You are buying a couch. It was your property.
It is an all-timer. I mean, you were not looking to buy anything. You were selling it.
How are you giving someone
you
money?
You gave someone money for something you were selling.
Hey, you got to go through stuff to learn stuff sometimes.
That one's just still like, it gets me every time.
All right, tomorrow I'll do the one about the neck. Someone said that's too good of a tease not to bring it up. I may have over-teased it. I may have over-promised for that one, but I'll make
Everyone's
sure
curious
we,
now.
We'll get to that tomorrow. Up next, it is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. You asked Ross Tucker about it. This sign-stealing controversy in Jacksonville, we'll discuss it a little bit more and get back into the offensive trends for the...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why fans. It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Chiefs.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Chiefs Red Half Hour brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net.
Reminder, coming up 1 hour from now, Matt McMullen of the Chiefs going to join us in studio. He does once a month here throughout the season. The Chiefs getting set to head to Jacksonville for a little Monday Night Football, so we'll have Matt McMullen. And then also in 1 o'clock hour, Josh Klingler will join us. He, of course, will be on the sideline in Jacksonville. I don't know what the weather is. We'll have to ask him. It could still be very humid. You could have tropical storms.
Here.
You could have, who knows? I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like in Jacksonville, but we'll check in with Kling for that trip to Jags, where I'm guessing that'll be a pretty rowdy crowd down there. But plenty of Chiefs fans, I'm assuming, are making this trip. Jacksonville was one of those. I know when the schedule came out that we were getting text and people were talking about, like, that was one of them they were marking. You know, Nashville was the other one, although Nashville ended up being against the Titans, unfortunately, close to Christmas, so that's tough. But Nashville and Jacksonville were two trips people were looking at.
You wanted to go to Jacksonville?
And so, well, because it's if and it's
I've
not
heard very good things
it's
about
not September
Jacksonville
anymore.
As well as bad, I guess.
I don't want to go to Jacksonville. I hope to never go to Jacksonville.
Really?
If I'm being honest. Yes.
There's a beach.
Jacksonville.
There's a beach.
That's its only redeeming quality.
Well, that's how a lot of cities and towns are in Florida.
Remember we ranked out the states we want to live in? Florida's real low on my list. super.
I wouldn't mind going to Jacksonville. I wouldn't want to live there, but I wouldn't mind going experience. To Jacksonville for a weekend to go to the beach. Why not? What's wrong with that?
Doesn't seem like a city.
Are you not a beach guy? We've talked about this. You're more.
I don't really care. I'd rather. Yeah, it doesn't like. I'm not going to travel just for a beach.
Yeah,
I'll say that's never going
to
be.
You were close to Jacksonville though, right?
I know.
Yeah,
I was in the state, right? I was in the Panhandle.
Yeah.
I've never been. I've been through Jacksonville. Never been there.
Gotcha.
Stayed there.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we'll find out about Jacksonville more as the week goes on. We might have someone on.
I'm a Jacksonville guest. I'll say it exactly like that.
Yeah, like, look, my co-host thinks that the city sucks and he doesn't want to go there. Your thoughts?
I've never been, mm-hmm. but this is like one of those, like, I've also never been to Cincinnati and I don't need to go.
Well, that one, I'm with you. You know, Cleveland, Cincinnati, I'm out. I don't need to go there. Anyway, thinking of Cleveland, by the way, we will keep an eye on it at noon today. Baseball picks back up, obviously based on results yesterday. It's a best of three series, so... a Tigers win and they move on. A Red Sox win today. They move on. A Cubs win today. They move on. A Dodgers win today. They would move on.
Yep.
I would like us to get a game three in one of the series. Just selfishly.
Be nice.
Selfishly, but we'll see. We may not get that based on a couple of the games yesterday, including the Dodgers demolishing the Cincinnati Reds. But we asked Ross Tucker earlier in the show about Liam Cohen, head coach of the Jags, Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator for the 49ers, and the incident that occurred after. But it was all set up in the days before the game. Just to refresh everybody, if they all maybe saw the incident after the game, this was before Robert Saleh was at a media availability, like any assistant coach or defensive coordinator would be. And he was talking about the Jags' offense and mentioned sign stealing.
You know, they've got a legally really advanced signal stealing type system where they always find a way to put themselves in an advantageous situation. They do a great job with it. They formation you to try to find any nugget they can. So we've got to be great with our signals, and we got to be great with our communication, and to combat some of the tells that we might give on the field. So they're almost elite in that regard. That whole entire tree, from Sean to Kevin O'Connell to all those guys, they all do it. So you know, so there's challenges. They're going to catch us in some situations where they have the advantage, and we just got to play good, sound, fundamental football and do our best to execute them.
There's nothing he said there that I think
is... He said it's part of a coaching tree. I don't think it's standard.
So I don't think he said anything that was crossing a line, individually calling out. I mean, he acknowledged it exists, but also brought up Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell. How, hey, this is an advantage that they're really good at. This is what we got to be careful.
We got to be tight.
I actually don't think he said anything wrong. I really don't.
And then Liam Cohen went essentially full Will Smith and said, keep my name out of your mouth.
He made it a million times worse.
Way worse.
We would never be talking about it.
And I stand by what I said with Ross. My biggest issue with Liam Cohen in this situation is, one, I don't like any coaches showing this sign of being like incredibly thin-skinned as it relates to other coaches and being offended by something outside of that. But also, I don't think he would have said it if he lost. I think he only got like braggadocious and chest pumped out because he won.
Duval.
I think he would have stayed kind of quiet on it. Look, we don't know whether or not Liam Cohen's going to be a good NFL head coach yet or not. Far too early to make any determinations on that. This, to me, would be a sign I wouldn't want in a coach. Why are you making a big deal about this? He talked about an advantage that you guys have. He said, we have to watch it. There's nothing to be done about it. It's not like he said the guy holds on every play. It's a legal
thing, yeah.
Yeah, he said legal. Like it wasn't calling him out on it.
I actually have no issue with how Robert Saleh approached that before. And then after the game, look, Liam Cohen, I'm not saying Liam Cohen is probably thrilled that they're talking about his sign stealing. But at the same time, like after the game, just ignore it, dude. And nobody, it's not a big deal at that point in time.
You can call the Astros like you're banging on a trash can secretly, or Bill Belichick secretly recording practices.
Yeah, Robert Saleh never said, you know, oh, the league really needs to look into this and crack down. He didn't say,
he just said, they do this, so we got to be careful.
Full disclosure, until the incident happened, I did not know, like most people, the comments like that we just played even existed. After the fact, I went in and was like, I was expecting Robert Saleh to be like, yeah, you know, Liam Cohen, you know, they're stealing signs. It's ridiculous. Yada, yada. I thought he was going to be attacking. He didn't mention Liam Cohen's name once.
He couldn't have said it. Also, just going back to, there might not be a coach in the NFL I would pick a fight with less than Robert Saleh. If you made me rank out every offensive, defensive coordinator and head coach to pick a fight with, he's like in the bottom five.
Yeah, that guy's jacked for sure.
I get my ass kicked. I'm not trying to, like, sure look tough when, like, yeah, you got your entire teammates to stand behind you. You know you're not going to actually. The worst part about somebody trying to pick a fight is in a situation where you know no one's going to let you fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bragging.
And it's weird because I actually like Liam Cohen. I think he's really sharp at all this. I don't really think this was a great way to handle it, but in general, I thought it was a good hire in Jacksonville. I still do. And I think they can have some success down there. But that was surprising to see him because he is from a similar kind of coaching tree as McVay and O'Connell. And those guys would not have done what we just saw.
No, I've never seen any of them. If anything, that entire coaching tree has this like outward perception of cool, calm, collected, right? Like as in we've all got to put together. We got our game plan. We're going to kind of stick with it. They seem like not the rah-rah guys, right? They don't come off. They come off as like analytical and sharp. And I'm not saying they all are, but like that's been kind of like the moniker of that coaching tree is that them stylistically. Liam Cohen's already picking fights with people week four of the season.
Big mad.
Cody likes.
I said that one time and you guys got all upset on this show.
I think.
Just wait till I start saying all the other things teenagers say.
Let's go. Oh, gosh. As it relates to the Chiefs, though, every team's well aware of what they're doing. Yeah. So Andy Reid's not caught off guard by it. Teams have played Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell as well. I actually don't. Again, it's not a big deal except for the fact that Liam Cohen made it a big deal. Otherwise, I'm not worried more about Jacksonville because they have this. Clearly, everybody knows they do it and knows Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell do it. Whatever.
Yeah.
And you move on. I will say 913-586-7965. We're getting a lot of text in about Jacksonville as a city now.
A lot of mixed reviews. It's good and bad.
Here's a couple. Yeah. So someone said, Jacksonville, absolutely horrible. Humidity, unbearable. Horrible, don't go. Very next text. Jacksonville's actually kind of nice. Worth at least one trip.
Kind of nice is not a cop. That's not somewhere else, I want to go. Someone's kind of nice.
I told you I would have no problem visiting Jacksonville. Someone else said, not in August or September, though.
Yeah.
Someone said, I was stationed in Jacksonville for 4 years. It's exactly like KC, but with a beach and southern food. Now, that's a great endorsement there. Someone else said, it's the same everywhere, but I was in dive school in Jacksonville. They were told to stay close to the school after hours or get shot. Okay.
That's not a ringing endorsement.
Someone else. Florida's a fabulous vacation. Jacksonville's a nice city. There's more places to visit than your cabin in Colorado, Cody.
I like going
there. More places. Beach way better than Colorado. LOL.
I like going to Colorado. It's not the only place I like to visit.
Yeah.
You know. I'm just not trying.
I do think Jacksonville.
I'm trying to spend as
little
time in Florida as possible, but also Jacksonville. Yeah, if 3 months out of the year, it's an unbearable. Yeah. Look, it's probably better than going to Houston.
Yes.
If I had to choose vacation destinations for July this summer, I'd probably end up in Jacksonville before Houston.
Yeah,
but I'm not trying to go to either.
Yeah, the beach is much nicer in Jacksonville than south of Houston, which is Galveston. We've talked about Galveston.
My sister lives near Galveston.
I've been there twice. Hey. I thought when I lived in Houston for a brief period of time, I'm like, oh man, I'm only an hour from the beach. I'm going to go to the beach all the time. I went twice, okay? I went two times in a year and a half or 2 years, and it's mud water, all right? It's the Mississippi River, all right? It's dirty. It's gross. I wanted to see it because I hadn't been to the beach in a while. So the first time, I was all excited, back when I could still smell as well. That's actually where the shrimp allergy started. I'm not even kidding. That's what happened. I had shrimp tacos down there, and I had shrimp the next day. Ever since then, I had the shrimp allergy. So that's where the shrimp allergy started.
I thought we had the cut of Charles Barkley talking about Galveston, but we don't, unfortunately.
Anyway, if it's not going to be super humid in Jacksonville, I actually think it's a good trip for Chiefs fans to go on Monday night. That's all. There's tropical storms in the area, but I think it's further off the coast. So
So it should be okay?
As a non-meteorologist, I think they're okay.
Should we get cloudy to give us
maybe
Jacksonville weather report? If it looks like it's going to be dicey,
I love the Florida humidity takes. We live in KC without the beach.
I will say it is funny, having lived in Florida for 2 years, it is funny when people say it's humid here, like it is kind of, but
Houston's way worse.
Yeah, Houston, Florida, it's a different animal.
I guess the question is, what is Jacksonville known for as far as like tourist attractions, other than we have
the
water.
Beach?
The beach is a big part. I'd like one more thing, please.
The world's largest cocktail party.
Well, that's a sporting event.
But it also has to, between two people
who don't even play in that city.
Correct. I mean, it's the same as Mizzou and KU.
I mean, Daytona Beach,
Kansas
so the Daytona 500, another sporting event.
Oh, okay. That's close enough.
Right?
Wait, but that's not. How close is Daytona Beach to Jacksonville?
It's not in Jacksonville.
But it's close, right?
Daytona Beach is on the ocean. Like you can see the ocean
but
from
how
the
race close,
track.
Like how close? Of
how
a drive?
Close is it to Jacksonville?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, it's not that close.
You're the one who lives in Florida.
This says an hour and a half.
I think it's still the same mileage.
I bet 87 miles. It's not close.
Yeah,
no, that's like saying like the Lake of the Ozarks rolling hills is part of Kansas City's appealing. tourist.
I was on the Gulf side. I will say this too: if you're going to go to Florida, go on the Gulf side. The beaches are better.
I would agree. Destin, Florida is amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
someone said Jacksonville's the armpit of America.
That's
rough.
There's other places that I would list that before there.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Chiefs and some good signs, I would say, for their offense overall. Jesse Newell over at The Athletic had sent out the stat that the Chiefs have scored on 54% of their drives this year. It's third best in the NFL. Only the Bills and Colts, of all teams, score at a higher... That's not surprising now, but if I had told you that a month ago, you'd have said I was an idiot.
I would have thought the Chiefs were screwed.
Yeah, but Bills and Colts, the two highest scoring teams on per drive basis. Gold, I view this as a massive good sign. But I will say, this is now a troubling, in my opinion, if this continues, 1.5, 2-year trend of, are you ready to change your entire red zone package? Because I overall take this as a good sign for their offense. They've been without their weapons, except for one game where they had half of them in Xavier Worthy. They'll still get Rashee Rice back in a couple of weeks. And they're still scoring on the third best percentage of their drives in the NFL. And for a defense that gets them the ball back, that's a great sign for the Chiefs, for their overall offensive success. But what does that mean about their red zone touchdown percentage? And why is that still an issue for them? And why have they not figured out a different way to score down there? And part of it, Gold, is I still see the same stuff down there. Some of the same nonsense where I don't feel like the creativity hasn't been at its maximum peak for Andy Reid during that time. So really, I'm overall happy with it, but it does still raise some red zone concerns for me. I don't know if that's wrong or not.
No, the red zone is an area that they still need to execute better in. I think, though, it puts in perspective more than just what we saw with our own eyes, which was an offense that looked functional, that had some explosiveness, that stat about 50-plus percent of their drives and all that, that's the whole year. So even in the games they were struggling, they were still actually scoring more than we think. Yeah. Problem is they were settling for field goals, and then there was also missed field goals mixed into that on top of it. But I think when we discussed it with Ross Tucker as well, the same thing applies. This offense is not yet back to being fully Chiefs, full go, full throttle, top offense in football. But they're now, with Worthy in it, one of the better offenses in football. And then the hope is, look out when Rice is part of the picture again.
Where would you guess they are in red zone scoring percentage? Knowing what you know, that they're like middle of the road points per game, but also score on a higher percentage of
them. I'm going to guess they're like 12th or something in red zone percentage. I have no idea.
Red zone touchdown percentage, they're 18th.
Okay, so they're below. Yeah.
They're behind the New York Jets.
That's a problem.
And the Chicago Bears. And a bunch of other bad teams you don't want me to mention. The number one team in the league is Philadelphia, who has scored on 100% of their red zone drive so far. 100%.
Jeez.
And look, I don't think they're going to maintain that rate. Certainly seems unlikely. But this is the company, when we start talking about what they can be offensively, they have to get up there in the top 10 with the teams like Denver, who's better than them, Buffalo, who scores at 66%, Green Bay, Detroit, Washington. And Washington's been without their starter, although Jaden Daniels was clear today and a full participant in practice. They've got to get out of the company they're in now, which includes Jacksonville, but includes a lot of very bad offenses. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that it's not just the same as last year, whose team is injured, and that some of their red zone issues are logical and can be explained away, Gold, by not having people to throw to in the red zone. Didn't have Tyquan Thornton last year. He's already a better red zone threat. Just got Xavier Worthy back, and we'll get Rashee back. So, like, I'm going to assume they, by the end of the season, will figure out a way to be better down there. But that's really the difference between why are they a mediocre offense and how do they be a top five offense? It's just scoring in the red zone. There's no, all the other metrics support the fact that the Chiefs can move the ball and score.
Some other fun things around the offense is always looking at pacing stats, especially a month into the season, because these are going to shift around quite a bit. There's some that I think will be able to stand up. There's some that are going to go in the opposite direction. So, for example, Marquise Brown, all right?
Good old Hollywood.
Uh-huh. 94 receptions he's pacing for, 888 yards and 4 touchdowns. I actually think the touchdowns can totally happen still. I don't believe he's going to finish with 888 yards. If he does, that tells me Worthy got hurt, Rice came back and had issues, etc. I don't think Hollywood Brown's getting 94 catches. I think it's probably going to still end up being a 70-something catch season, 685 yards, 4 or 5 touchdowns, which, by the way, totally fine from what he's supposed to be, which is your number 3 or 4 option in the offense.
Yeah, no problem.
Travis Kelce's pacing are interesting. 64 catches, 774, whoa, and 4 touchdowns. I actually think yardage maybe is right there,
touchdowns, I could still see being higher as well. I could see him having a 7 or 8 touchdown season, even if he's only going to catch 65 to 75 balls this year for 800 yards.
Do you realize, though, that that would be a significant...
Yeah, he's normally a 95 catch guy, 91 catch guy.
I mean, I can just take you the last 4 years, so we don't have to go too far back. 2021, 92 catches. 2022, 110. Let's take him to new recent Travis Kelce. 93 and 97. If he goes down to a 64 catch guy, that is a significant difference in his usage than in any other previous years. And in those years, that's how he got to 823 yards and 984 yards. If he finishes at 60, I still think he'll finish with more catches, more yards, and more touchdowns than he's pacing right now. Because I think his life is getting easier, not harder.
Yeah,
and then he'll
I don't
be targeted
much,
a little bit more. No, not significantly.
Like, I think the touchdowns
he's getting in the 90s.
I think the touchdowns have the chance to increase the most as far as from the pace, right? Like, he's pacing for 4 touchdowns. I think that could be 7. Yardage, 774. Maybe it's 50 yards more than that. Like, I think he's an 800-yard. I think before the season, I was in the 800 to 850 range. I'll stick with that. I think that's still realistic. Catches, maybe he ends up with like 70-something, Cody, but he's not getting 90 catches this year. And frankly, nor should he, based on what they're going to have with this offense when Rice and Worthy are around.
Tell me how he gets there. Like, tell me where there's 60 catches over, you know, 12 games, 13 games for him. It doesn't, honestly, it just doesn't, it would seem like a bad way to use your offense other than the same thing I just said. Right now, Travis Kelce for the last like 2 years has been the only option to throw to regularly because of some of the injury stuff and because Rashee Rice was a rookie 2 years ago and they hadn't figured all that stuff out yet. Who the hell's going to be left to guard Travis Kelce when they're all back? And I know we've said this before, and we still got to get through 2 healthy weeks before we get there. But genuinely, genuinely, if you run a 3 wide receiver set that is Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice, and either Tyquan Thornton or Hollywood Brown, and then Travis Kelce underneath, he's going to get a bad defender on him. He's going to be more open. They're going to send more blitz guys to try to disrupt it.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any path for him to be a 950-yard receiver,
though.
I don't think that's happening.
I think it'll be more, but not way more.
Tyquan Thornton, his fun pacing stats... 43 catches, 774 yards, and 13 touchdowns.
Is that like 20 yards a catch? How many yards did you say? What was that?
The first 2 games of the year, he was averaging 20 yards a catch. The last 2, it was 11 yards or 12
yards.
He's
like 17 yards a catch overall.
I do not think he will get to 13 touchdowns as much as I would love to see that.
I don't think he'll get to 780 yards
either. I think he'll end up being a 580 to 625, which is still more than most people expected. And I think he can be a 7 touchdown guy. Yeah. He's got 3 right now. I understand he's pacing for 13. That's the whole point.
These are
going
to be fascinating to look back on because once the full offense is back, there might be a game. There might be 2 games in a row where Tyquan had 0 catches for 0 yards.
He was on the field way less this past week.
Yeah. He only had a target, 2 targets?
Two, I think.
Two targets, and 1 was for the touchdown.
And 1 catch for 11-yard touchdown or
whatever. He's great. Look, if he is younger, souped-up Justin Watson, I'm in. I'm sold. Justin Watson had a role and was effective for this team. I'll live, Gold.
Yeah.
Justin Watson, for a several-year stretch, was their number one deep threat. That's not a great thing, but he was.
Juju Smith-Schuster, his pacing numbers, 60 catches, 642, and 4 touchdowns.
He's the guy whose numbers I think are going down the fastest.
He'll be his is going to be more in the 40-catch, 45-catch range for 500 yards. Touchdowns, I think 4 is fine. He has 1 right now. I believe he could still end up with 4 or 5.
I think the yards and the catches are getting ready to go way down on Juju. Mm-hmm. I don't think, I mean, what like, how is he going to get
targeted? The only thing is, they will get him.
How is he going to get targeted?
I agree. The only thing would be injuries, and then he is going to get snaps because they really like him in blocking. So, you know, is there a situation where there's an audible? He's on the field for that play anyway, and there's an audible that somehow he's never going to be the first or second option, of course, but. He's someone that when Mahomes does a scramble drill, there's clearly some rapport there. Where like he knows how to find the soft spot and find a zone to get open when Mahomes is rolling out or whatever.
They should have no shortage of third down options. Juju's good in third down. Hollywood's been good in third down this year. Travis Kelce's made an entire living, a career, being available on third down. They were throwing to Rashee Rice on third down last year. Like they should have almost – that should be the strength of this team. We're in 3rd and 6 or less. No worries. We're going to spread you out and you can't guard everybody. Like, that's how I would play it if I were the Chiefs. We're going to spread you out. We're going to put 4 wide receivers out there. And we're going to put a tight end out there. And we're going to dare you to get pressure on us and to find somebody to block. And if you can't, we will find someone to get those yards.
I mean, the Chiefs this year are 15th in the NFL in third down conversion rate, just 39%. You go to last year, even though the offense, of course, had its issues. Yeah, that was actually an area they were awesome. They were third. So right now, they're just not converting on third down at the same rate.
And they're still scoring on 54% of the drives. There's a ton of upward movement potential on the offense, all going back to the initial part. There's just a lot of room for improvement on the offensive end, not just on the season. Obviously, if they just played like they did last week on offense all year, I think we'd all be fine.
Up next, we'll get to what's trending, plus a chance to win a $50 gift card from our friends over at Jefferson's. And we'll talk more about Salvador Perez and some of the comments from JJ Piccolo yesterday.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.